You are listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast.
Hello, welcome to yet another Beast Unleashed podcast interview episode. This will also be featured on All Things Transformers, the other podcast feed, the General Transformers podcast feed. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and I am joined by Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Yeah, we have a really awesome privilege this afternoon.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm like, I can't say anything at this point, and we haven't even done it yet. I mean, usually I'm shocked after the interviews, but it's like, holy crap, because after we finished our David Kay interview and released it, I had this brainstorm idea. I am friends with Gary Chalk and Scott McNeil on Facebook, and I sent them both a general invitation requesting an interview. 2 days later, I have a new message from Gary Chalk saying, you know, just let me know what the time, date, you know, whatever works for you guys. I said, you know, that's fine. Just, you know, give us your, you know, a contact number for you and we'll, you know, we'll work it out and whatever else. And yeah, here in about 10 minutes, we're going to be talking to Gary Chalk, the voice of Optimus Primal from Beast Wars and Beast Machines. Oh, holy crap.
I'm nudging you. I'm nudging you through the internet and saying, "Oh my God, it's Gary Chalk." Gary Chalk is gonna talk to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those moments.
Yeah, and we are going to be. I'm going to be approaching this interview pretty much fresh because I've never met the guy. I've never talked to the guy. Unlike you, who have spent 30-40 minutes in line waiting for the guy at BotCon.
Yeah, I actually shook his hand and got a picture with him, and my wife got a picture with him, too, because we both had stuff we wanted to sign. And I had him sign my monkey. it was funny, too, because I had an Optimus Primal figure, I don't want to say leader class, I'm not sure what the classes were called back then, but it's the big one. And I said, you know, "Hi, will you sign my monkey?" And he just kind of looked at me like, I'm not sure how to take that. But, yeah, I have an Optimus Primal with a big Gary Chalk across the chest.
Cool.
It's very cool, yeah.
Yes. This will be a special episode. This will not be an inclusion to any of the other episodes because this will actually go out. I'm probably going to put it out Christmas Day. It'll be a Christmas present for all the listeners who, you know, like us, have no life and aren't really doing anything Christmas Day than opening presents, but, you know.
Merry Christmas, one and all.
Yes, exactly. Up next is our interview with Gary Chalk. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. This is Michael Blanchard, and I am joined with my friend and podcasting partner, Michael Wilson. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Today we have a super awesome privilege to interview Gary Chalk. Yes, that's right. Optimus Primal from Beast Wars and Beast Machines is on the line with us. Hello, Gary.
Hello. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes, happy holidays. So, it's funny you mentioned that. This interview will be going up Christmas Day, so Merry Christmas.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. So, how you been? What have you been up to? What are some of your recent projects?
Well, I just finished a little sci-fi film called Behemoth, which will be on the Sci-Fi Channel coming up pretty soon in another month or two. Other than that, a animated film called Max Steel. And as far as that goes, that's about it. We rolled up a lot of series earlier this year with Robots. It was a new series that I've been working on last year. And that's all finished up pretty well, so everything's sort of wrapped up for the holidays. I'm getting ready to go over to England in January 21st, I'll be in London doing a Stargate convention. Mm-hmm. And that's about it for the moment.
Aren't you also doing, what is the English Transformers convention?
In Birmingham.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is it called?
Auto Assembly.
Auto Assembly, yeah. I'm doing the Auto Assembly with Scott McNeil. We're going to go up there and do that in Birmingham in August.
Very cool.
That's going to be fun.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get too far along, I'd like to say that we here at The Beast Unleashed also listened to your interview with Brian Kilby and his friends over at Radio Free Cybertron. That was a great interview, by the way.
Oh, thanks very much.
Yeah, we are going to be covering some different ground here in this one, since we are Beast Wars and Beast Machines podcast. We'll be zeroing in on your Beast Wars experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Invite all of our listeners to tune into Brian's interview, which had a broader scope, and I'm sure that Brian will send his fans here as well.
Yes.
So, yes. Michael, you want to go with the first question here?
Sure, yeah. Gary, you've popped up in a lot of live-action roles that kind of surprised me. You know, not so much surprised like, oh my god, why is he there? But surprised like, whoa, cool, he's there. I was really excited to see you in like Freddy versus Jason.
Yes, that was very, very fun. I was playing Sheriff Carter, and my part of the legend was that I actually killed Freddy Krueger, which caused him to come back as the creature on Nightmare on Elm Street as he got burned in the house. So that's that was one sort of iconic thing that I was very proud of, and I got to work with Ronnie Yu, who was a hoot, who I'd worked with before on another sort of animated live action film about fighting kangaroos. Do you think I can remember the name of the title? I can't. What was it called?
It's not kangaroos.
But Ronnie was a hoot. Yeah, no, I've worked in a lot of films. I would at least over 100.
Well, the like your character Colonel Chekhov in Stargate SG-1, loved that. I was really, again, surprised to see you there doing the Russian accent.
Yes, I do that on occasion. I've actually, you'll have to pardon me. I'm just getting over a cold, so I'm a little bit. My voice is a little rough, but I've done a few things. I've played a German and a Frenchman and an Englishman and an Irishman and a Russian on various shows. The Russian was quite fun because I had had a thing with the producers of Stargate. I used to work with them before in a show called MacGyver.
Right.
Back in the 80s. And I was on several shows of MacGyver back then, and got to know Richard Dean very well, and he turned out to be a really wonderful guy, and also Don Davis, who played General Hammond,
right,
who since passed away last year, but which we're very sad to see him go, because I've known him for very many years, and he was a very good friend. And I miss him anyway. They had said, "Oh yeah, we're going to get you onto Stargate," and I said, "Okay, well that sounds like fun." So I waited a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years. Nope, it's coming. And then one day I got a call and said, "Oh yeah, we finally got a role for you on Stargate SG-1." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" He said, "Oh, it's a good one. How's your Russian?" And I went, "You're kidding me, right?" And he said, "No, how's your Russian?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. I can do it not so bad, but, you know, speaking, I don't know." So they said, "Well, we got this guy, but he speaks Russian a lot." And I said, "Well, you know, then we'll give it a go." So they hired a Russian coach who was from Mosfilm in Moscow, who was a television director in Moscow, named Sasha, I think it's Bulganin, I can't remember exactly the pronunciation, but Sasha I'd known and was a great guy, and he came and taught me how to speak Russian, because all the first scenes in the movie were in Russian, or in the show were in Russian. Uh-huh. And as he was teaching me, he's going, oh, this is very weird, very strange. And I says, what? He says, when you speak Russian, you sound exactly like Joseph Stalin. He says, you sound like Stalin. You have same rhythm, same tone, same accent. It's eerie. And I went, oh, yeah, channeling Stalin, great. But so I ended up learning all these scenes in Russian, and then when I came to the day to shoot the first scene, he said, oh, it's too long, we're going to cut the Russian. And I said, no, I learned for 3 weeks this, we're going to use it, but they never did keep it in the show.
So the question that leads into would be, you know, do you prefer the voice acting or the on-camera work like you did in Watchmen?
Well, the on-camera work is incredibly exciting. I always enjoy it a lot. And the thing I like about, well, the thing is, I love to perform. And performance comes in different ways, and the joy comes out of different things. With the voiceover stuff, with the animation, I enjoy it because the scripts are fun. And I get to go in the studio dressed in my pajamas or whatever I want, and go in the studio and have to put makeup on and don't have to memorize tons of lines. And I get to work with a bunch of people who I just adore, who are tremendously talented individuals. So that's my thing with the voiceover stuff. And you get to sort of create a theater of the mind, or, you know, you can create the movie in your head, and hopefully it works with what the guys at the animation studio want. With film, the great thing about film is that it's technically a lot of fun, and you get to work with a lot of great people, and just, you know, hitting the marks and being there is just very exciting.
Yeah. Actually, it's very funny. The very first live-action role I saw you in, but I mean, I knew, you know, Optimus Primal, the voice of, you know, Optimus Primal from Beast Wars. The very first time I was able to put a face to the voice was when you played Dum Dum in Nick Fury.
My God, Dum Dum, yeah, Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was fun. I got to work with David Hasselhoff and Lisa Renner, and I got to work with Stan Lee.
Yeah.
It's not in the movie, but I think it might be in the DVD. But, you know, Stan Lee usually does a scene in every movie that's made of one of his shows.
Yeah.
You know, he always shows up, like, you know, he showed up in Spider-Man, and I think he showed up in The Hulk a couple of times. Well, I got to do the scene with him in Nick Fury. And I said to him, I can't believe it, I'm meeting Stan Lee. And he goes, well, I'm meeting Gary Chalk. And I said, yeah, but you don't understand. When I was a kid, every Saturday we'd go to the corner store, my buddies and I, and we'd pick up this week's edition of the comics. And Stan Lee wrote all our famous, all our favorite comics. And so we're sitting there on the paper, and sitting there on the sidewalk in the summertime reading them. And all we're looking for is, because we'd always send letters to Stan Lee. You know, you have the section in the comic book, send a letter to Stan Lee.
Right.
And I'd always send a letter, and then we'd go and look in the comics to see if our letter showed up, and it never showed up. So I said to him, you know, I wrote to you religiously. I wrote every week letters to you, hoping that you would answer my letter, but it never came. And he goes, no. We only have room. We get thousands of letters. I know, you get thousands of letters, but you could have at least picked one. And he goes, well, I'll tell you what. You take a picture with me, and I'll sign your picture, and you can sign mine. I went, okay, so now I have a signed picture of me and Stan Lee. And I thought, it was just one of those, you know, it's one of those defining moments in your life when you meet an actual hero of yours in the flesh. You know, this legend, and I blew my mind.
I felt the same way when I met you.
Oh! Where did we meet? In North, not North Carolina, where?
That was BotCon in 2006. I'm trying to remember which one that was.
It was in Lexington, Kentucky.
No, it was in Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. You were there with
Chicago.
Greg Berger and I think Dan Gilbazan.
That's right.
Yeah, and we sat in line, and I asked you to sign my monkey.
Yeah, I asked, and I did.
Yeah, I still have
him. I signed a few monkeys, but... Yeah, to tell you the truth, I don't really go to many conventions. I've only been to, as far as the BotCons and the Transformers, I've only been to, I can count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
That's more than I've been to.
Yeah, well, considering they have them all over the place, I've met some people in Louisiana. In July, I went to a MechaCon in Louisiana, which was really fun. It was huge. I couldn't believe it. There was like 1,200 people there.
Wow.
And they've moved, because their venue in Lafayette is too small, they're moving it to New Orleans this year. But I went there in July and just had an absolute blast. But you never get to see a lot of people. Mm. Forgot my focus. I forgot my question.
No.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I was sitting there going, what the hell am I doing?
I had just made a comment to about the Nick Fury movie. Moving into the Beast Wars stuff, what is your favorite memory from Beast Wars and Beast Machines?
My favorite memory... Well, one of my favorite memories from Beast Wars was Scotty used to like to lay down on the floor and take a nap when he wasn't working. We would cover him with paper. That was fun.
You didn't draw anything on it while he was sleeping?
And tormenting Ian Corlett was always my favorite. Because Ian and I would stand beside each other in the studio. He was the one who played Cheetor.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to unnerve him because I would do visual things to him while he was doing his read. And he would say, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Nothing. Nothing. I'm not doing anything." He said, "Stop looking at me." The favorite things were just being in there with those guys, and of course, watching Venus Turzo do her thing with Black Arachnia was always a treat.
Mm-hmm.
We were always jealous because Scotty McNeil always got to stand beside Venus, who was so wonderful.
Yeah,
is that a visual thing or something we might not know from? From that being
Venus
there.
Turzo?
Yeah.
Venus Turzo is absolutely drop-dead gorgeous.
I had met her once at another convention.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Is she not just drop-dead gorgeous?
She was very attractive. And Scott McNeil was there, and he went on and on and on about how very attractive she is.
She is very attractive. And what's really attractive about her is not only is she just, like, hot-looking, I mean, she's really hot, but she's just the nicest person you'd ever meet. Just a wonderful, bubbly, great, fun personality. Just enjoyed the hell out of her.
We just had a privilege a couple weeks ago to speak with David Kay, and he said what he misses most about Beast Wars and Beast Machines was pulling your finger. Would you... Would you let...
thank you, Dave. Pull my finger! Come on, pull it, pull it! And he said, "I'm not going to pull your finger." "Don't pull his finger," Ian would say. "No." And he said, "No, pull my finger." And he'd go, "I'm pulling it." And he goes, "No, don't pull it. Ah, too late." And at the end of the year, I got my my ceremonial can of Florient.
So the question is, what do you miss most about your time on Beast Wars and Beast Machines?
Well, I miss the cast so much. I mean, I just had so much fun with them. And I had a pile of fun with Sue Blue and with Mike Donovan and with Al Willows and all the gang. They were just a great bunch of people, and we worked together like almost every day for years. And it was a real crusher when the show ended, and I couldn't see why it ended, but it did. And I just miss that. I miss all the recording sessions and seeing the new toys come out and the new posters, and that's basically it. I just miss that camaraderie of being there and telling really great stories, and it was very proud to be part of a groundbreaking show.
Yeah.
You know? It was just like a really neat premise. And I remember the very first time they sent out the test reel of the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched it on the big screen in the studio, and we just went, oh my god, this is a TV cartoon. Oh my god, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it just blew our minds.
That was state of the art back in the day.
Yeah, state of the art back then. I mean, yeah. It was the first time that anybody been doing CGI for network television. Now everybody's doing it, but, you know.
Right.
But it was the first time, and it was like, it was just like, we are part of this, and that's what I want it to be, still.
Right.
Well, now that we've covered, you know, your favorite memories and such, what was, should I put it, was there anything that you did not like or that was hard for you to do in the Beast era?
Season three, when we got all introspective and we were all sniping at each other all the time, those storylines, the sort of esoteric with, you know, going on to the planet, I guess it was the planet Cybertron.
Uh-huh.
And we were, you know, the key to the future lies buried in the past, and all those things. We got very, very zen. I mean, it was neat, but I think after a while, I just wanted to get back to the action, moving and banging and slashing and going after Megatron and his evil cohorts. It was fun, but that was one that was a bit tough.
Yep. So you're saying it was kind of going against character for Primal.
For me, I thought it was. I thought it was like I was turning into a navel gazer. Well, that's what I thought. I mean, you can look at season three and tell me what you think, but I think that's that was one of my only complaints.
Yeah, I think that's a general criticism with that season, with Primal not being, you know, the leader so much, to the point where Cheetor had to take over.
Yeah, and I just thought that it was wrong, and I got into a few beefs in the studio with the producers and the writers about it. And it's, come on, you guys. I mean, what is this? We sit here, I'm sitting here doing nothing, basically, and everybody's fighting amongst each other. What's the show about? We're a team, not a dysfunctional family.
So what sort of things would you consider, difficult to do?
Difficult to do? What would I consider difficult to do?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any orcs or orcish kind of villains on video games?
Have you been asked to do that?
Oh, yes, I've done it. When all you do is, attack, kill, destroy, attack. You'll do that for 8 hours and you got no voice left.
All right. I have a little side question now that you bring that up. Were you the voice of the prehistoric humans?
The prehistoric humans in
Beast Wars.
Yes, some of them.
I was gonna say, because the older father type figure, because I just watched the series a couple weeks ago now, and I'm like, wait, that sounds just like Primal, except he's doing his Uggs and Oggs and all that.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yes,
those things. I don't think there's anything I really find difficult to do. I find some things challenging. The more, you know, the more depth the character has, and the the more you have to sort of like reach into your inner self to find the truth in it. That's it's not so much difficult, but it's challenging. Mm. And making it, you know, because basically what are we doing? We're telling a story, and we're going to tell the story so that that in a way that people care about us. You know, just if we're bad or good or indifferent, it's just, you know, if you're going to tell a story, you want to make sure that people care about you, whether you're a villain or a good guy. And if you don't do it properly or don't do it honestly, people will see that and will say, nope, don't like it, off, change the channel.
Yeah. At the time Beast Wars and Beast Machines were on air, which voice actors in the industry did you admire most?
My favorite voice actors, the ones I admired, was Maurice LaMarche. Thought he was fabulous. You know, he played on Ren and Stimpy.
Yep.
Oh, sorry.
Pinky and the Brain.
Pinky and the Brain. Played the Brain. Right?
Yep.
I thought, to me, he was the most a wonderful, versatile actor and very funny. I worked with him a few times. The other ones, I really liked Tony Jay, who since passed away. He was the voice of Megabyte.
Mm-hmm.
On that other show, Reboot. And of course Dawes Butler and Mel have always been my hero since I was a kid. But Dawes Butler, I just he was like, I grew up with Dawes Butler, with Huckleberry Hound and Quick Draw McGraw and all those, and so he was tremendous.
Yes.
Question. What could you tell us, or what can you reveal about you know, the behind the scenes moments during Beast Wars, Beast Machines recordings, and not just, you know, how hot Venus is, but stuff that might pop up in like a cast only Christmas party clip show.
A cast only Christmas party clip show.
Have you ever heard the Thundercats one on the internet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, I'll check it out.
Now that you've given it to me, I'll check it out.
It's racy outtakes from their recordings. And it was only supposed to, mostly just, racy outtakes.
Basically, they're...
Well, you know what's unfortunate unfortunate in that sense, or quite fortunate, is most of the cast of Beast Wars or Beast Machines were squeaky. You know what I'm saying? There's we have two very devout Christians, an elementary school teacher, just a straight guy like myself, an older fella. I mean, we never really did any of those kind of outtakes. I mean, the worst, I think I can't even recall of anything we did nasty on that show. Well, not nasty, but outtakey. We never really did any of that. Man, it's kind of boring, huh?
Yeah, I'm expecting something, you know.
Something rapey and nasty?
Something blackmail worthy. I want the dirt, man.
Yeah. Oh, the dirt. Well, to tell you the truth, there wasn't really any. I think the only thing was, you know, my dog used to play with the engineer's dog in the studio, and that created a little grief sometimes. Other than that, I mean, I'm trying to think. Well, maybe Scotty could tell you, but all I remember is going in and, doing the show, recording the show, and leaving the room. I think one time I took my headset off and threw it on the floor in frustration about something.
Yeah.
Got into a beef with Sue one time, but that's about it. I mean, there was really nothing. I mean, you have to remember that at the time that we were recording Beast Machines, we were recording shows every single day.
Mm-hmm.
different shows. I mean, there was Beast Machines, and there was Reboot, and there was, you know, Mummies, and Knights of Justice, and all these different shows that we were recording every day, and it's like we're just going into the studio, running into the next studio, and going out one after the other, one after the other. So we didn't really have any time to get silly.
Right.
Imagine we tried to get silly. He says, you know, we say to Venus, okay, Venus, it's time to do your running walla. And she go, what? It's time to do the running walla. And you know what, running, well, you know. Oh, yeah, with you, girl. And then when she figured it out, she screamed at us. You bastards. How dare you?
That's funny. The Beast Wars voice actors were a tight-knit group back in the day. Do you still keep in touch with the original team?
Yes, I do. Every single one of them. The only one I haven't seen in the last couple of months is Al Willows, because he's been out and about doing some theater. But I saw Scotty the other day. I saw Venus about a month ago, a couple of months ago on the beach. And that was fun. And Ian, I saw a couple of days ago. Ian Corlett, yep. I see him all the time. Jimmy Burns, I saw him last week, and he has a radio show on Shore 104.1 every Saturday night from 8 to 11. And if you ever get a chance to listen, that's a great radio station. Just a little plug for Shore 104.1 in Vancouver.
I wonder if you can get that on the internet.
Because
that would be worth tuning into. I live in Chicago, nowhere near Vancouver, but if I could hear that, that would be very cool.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it's very cool, and Jim is very cool in it. And all the rest of them, yeah, see them all the time. And
you mentioned Scott McNeil. We would love to talk to him sometime. You can make that happen, right?
I can make that happen. I can torment him to do an interview. I have been calling him. Actually, I've been calling him for the last week or so, trying to get a hold of him, but I don't know where the hell he is. But he goes on these conventions all the time.
Yeah.
So he's never around. But I'll make a point of getting a hold of him and send him your way.
Very cool.
Nice. See, that Jedi mind trick worked.
Your mind trick, yes. No, because he's actually a fun interview.
Yeah. I saw a video that someone posted that had tagged you in it. It was about a reboot panel where where Scotty was talking about going to some convention and somebody was drawing a picture of Waspinator. And he was standing right behind the guy and he went into his Waspinator voice. And like after he says that, the camera pans to you next to him and you're like, I was there!
You were there.
You were there.
I was there. Oh, I remember that. I remember that. Yeah. And the guy was Scott. And the guy was doing Waspinator, Scott was doing Waspinator behind him as he was drawing it. And the look on his face was very funny.
Oh, yeah. He's an entertaining guy.
He's what?
He's an entertaining guy. It's good to talk
to him. Oh, yeah. Very entertaining.
Yeah.
Quite fun. That reboot panel that we did was at the the anime convention in Vancouver in, June.
Huh.
I think it was in June or August, one of the two. I can't remember. But it was that was a big one. That was like, you know, there's like 5,000-6,000 people there.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. It was in the new convention center, and it was just like, whoo-hoo.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Well, back to Beast Machines. You know, how were you informed that the show was going to end?
How was I informed?
I mean, did everybody know ahead of time, or was it just, oh boy, we're not picked up for another season? You know, Bob Skerra made this ending for us.
No, the end came as I recall. The guys who were producing it had decided they weren't going to do it anymore. They just said, no, I'm going to move on to something else. And it just stopped. And I had no idea, you know, that that was what was happening. But we had a sort of a, an inkling that the season that we did that last season was going to be our last season. It was some kind of a, I don't know if I'm telling tales out of school, but I don't know if it was some sort of a dispute with Hasbro about the show. And so they decided not to do the show anymore.
Now,
that's how I figured. But they remounted it again, didn't they? Or not Beast Machine. No, they remounted Transformers again down in the States.
Yeah. Well, after the fact, they had the Japanese came up with a show where they actually brought back vehicle Transformers. And they translated that and brought it to the States. And that stuck around for about a year. But
it was which one? Cybertron, Energon? Oh, Robots in Disguise, yeah.
Yeah, no, that before Armada came in and started the Unicron trilogy. But
yeah, and that's what I did, was that trilogy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Do you think that the show could have done anything else after that, or do you wish it could have gone on longer?
Oh, maybe I got to tell you, I really enjoyed that show. I would have loved to see what would happen if the Beasts had suddenly been transformed into the future and assumed the original Transformers mode again. That would have been cool. I would love to have seen that, because, well, how did they get the animal things? They landed on the planet, got the DNA, scanned the animals, and became those animals. So it would have been nice to see them all go into like some deep hibernation, and then all of a sudden wake up in the future and take on some new vehicles.
Yeah, I have a little side question to that. Did you? What was your favorite version of Optimus Primal as far as character design? Because he went through several different transformations throughout the entire Beast Wars, Beast Machines.
Yes. My favorite was the not the gorilla. The gorilla I really loved. I still have my gorilla, but the one I really loved was the one just before Transmetal.
That was the original gorilla.
Oh no! Sorry, it's the one. I guess it was the Transmetal.
Oh, the blue one?
Yeah, the blue one.
With the surfboard.
Yeah. I kind of like that one.
That is a very cool design.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. The other ones, I can't remember. I still have them. I should go down in the basement and look at my little shelf. I keep them on a shelf, you know.
So do
in my little room. My mom won't allow me to have them in the living room.
Oh.
I have to keep them in my little room downstairs.
It's sad, but I can relate to that.
But it's true. You know, my wife says, "You're not having those things in here."
That's right.
And I said, "Yeah, but they're mine." Yeah. She goes, "No, you have your little room downstairs that you can put them in with your little posters and your little this." And I'm going, "I'm not a kid." These are memories, memoirs of a life well lived.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I keep them all.
Nice. transitioning into, the Unicron trilogy stuff.
Yeah.
After Robots in Disguise did its year and was quickly, shot down. I don't think they even ended it. There were a couple at the end that I've never seen.
Yeah.
But then you were cast as Optimus Prime again in the next three shows, the Unicron trilogy.
Yeah.
So, how did you change from Optimus Primal to Optimus Prime?
Well, with Optimus Primal, to my mind, was a lot more human, a lot warmer, and subject to emotional kind of outbursts, and had a real sort of, I hesitate to say, but a very paternal relationship with all the rest of the gang.
Mm-hmm.
on Beast Machines. But in the trilogy, Optimus is back to his old officer. I'm my bad. Jetfire, let's go. You know, it was more like the Peter Cullen version.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I tried to inject some of that humanity into that trilogy, but they said, nope, got to make them tougher, harder, bigger, you know, more like the original Transformers. And so that was sort of a thing that I enjoyed. It was good, but I wished I would have, I know it sounds silly, but I wished I would had an opportunity to inject more me into the character.
Right. Now, was that because it was you were constrained by the Japanese translations?
I was constrained big time by the Japanese translations. The hard part about those things is that Japanese speak with a very specific rhythm, and Americans speak with a very specific rhythm. And Japanese is, you know, doitemashita, konbanwa, genki desu ka. You know, it's all these polysyllabic words, and Americans is Jetfire, let's go. You know, so how do you fit those polyphonic words into American language that makes sense and doesn't sound like, looks like we've got some raspberry jam on my toast. I would have preferred strawberry, but they only had raspberry. Blueberry would be nice. But, you know, it's like adding all these extra extraneous things, and it just made it very, very difficult. And of course, in the Japanese, they love, in Japanese animation, they love the long, charging confrontation where good and evil, collide in this, you know, cosmic battle in space, and they're like miles apart, and they start this long Kai scream, and collide and do this giant sumo wrestling thing. It used to drive me nuts.
Yeah, I personally don't like that.
I don't like it either.
I also don't like the form of storytelling where you say, Optimus Prime just got his butt kicked all the way around the block, but that's okay because he can power up with this new power-up armor he's acquired and turn right around and defeat Megatron that way. It's not, how do I think my way out of this? How can I use my team to benefit?
There's no real struggle.
Yeah.
Is there? There's no real peril.
It's
there's no real danger.
Combine, and then we're going to defeat this guy, whereas we couldn't 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that form of storytelling.
No. Combine when all the characters combine into one giant character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From a toy point of view, I like that. I like combiners. But from the storytelling, I mean, they didn't use it to push the story along. They use it as a means to an end.
Yeah, and it's to my mind, it's contrived, and it's just not interesting. You know, it doesn't leave you, what's the word, it's not, you feel like you're anticipating what's going to happen.
Yeah, you're not.
You already know they're going to win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, sorry, Megatron, it doesn't matter how fabulous your idea is or how powerful you are, you're going to lose.
Well, I think I was going to say you could move on to the next question if you wanted.
We normally see you on the small screen in a sheriff's or general uniform since you play the leaders in many cartoons like He-Man, Beast Wars, and the Unicron Trilogy. Would you say that you prefer to play good guys?
I do prefer to play good guys. Well, no, that's not true. Playing bad guys is fun. Because when you play the bad guy, you get the best lines. You get to do all the evil stuff, and it's really interesting, and you get to go muhahahahaha a lot. The good guy has to go, we can't do that. We have to do this. We have to maintain our sense of honor. Come on, darling, don't do that. Come over here. We'll try it. You know, it's just like, in Freddy versus Jason. I was the good guy in Freddy versus Jason. And in every scene, I said, we're going to contain this thing.
We've got to contain the situation. If we don't contain this right away, this lack of containment is going to cause us some containment problems. You know, it's, I said containment in every single scene. If you watch the movie, you'll see in every scene I say, we've got to keep this thing contained. And I went to Ronnie Yu about it, and I said, Ronnie, you know, I say contained in every single scene. And he says, no, it's good. It's like a joke. You know, we let the people hear. You say contain every time. It's a good joke. We like it. So we're going to keep it.
That was just annoying.
Huh?
I remember that, but I was just annoyed. Like, come on, give Gary some good lines here.
Some good lines. But I never forget that. But, no, I like playing villains. I've played a few of them. I did a villain on Ghost Cop. That was quite fun. And a few other shows like Airwolf. I was a villain a few times. But the good guy is great too. Like in Nick Fury, that was really straight ahead and fun.
Who were you in Airwolf?
Huh?
Who were you in Airwolf?
In Airwolf, I was a in one episode. I was an arms dealer. In another one, I was a mercenary. A mercenary soldier. What the hell was my name? We're fighting in Burma somewhere, you know, with the drug cartel.
Right.
And
well, I'm gonna have to go check.
Oh, I got to beat up Gerwin Davies, and yeah, it was fun. Got to fly in a helicopter and you know shoot at stuff. Yeah, I've had a few good ones, but villains get all the best lines. The trouble with being the good guy is you're the straight guy, so you have all the that humorless guy who just you know straight ahead Dudley Do Right, you know, like
yeah.
Goody Two Shoes.
I guess you get the best lines.
I honestly don't think now. I know Optimus Primal is a good guy through and through, but as the ending of Beast Machines came up with those like final four episodes,
yeah.
And his anger that you put into it towards Megatron, I think he was kind of rebelling against everything.
Yeah, I would say so, because it was the time, you know, it was time to end it once and for all. And every one of us, I think, you know, we get self-righteously, well, we get righteously angry, mm-hmm. You know, because it's like with, you know, any good person or any good group of people, you get pushed to a certain extent, and you go, we're like, you know, a network. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. Right?
Yeah. After Megatron takes out a whole planet, it's time to put the foot down.
Yeah, it's time to put the foot down. You know, I let the block go. I let the car go. You know, that was fun. You destroyed a city. All right. Planet, I'm sorry, buddy. You've gone just too far.
What I would find funny is if I found out that whenever you and David Kay might have a phone conversation that you talk to each other in the Primal and Megatron voices, that would be so funny to learn if you guys did that.
Well, actually, I have talked to David Kay on numerous occasions, and he has called me back exactly the same way. We have spent a lot of time, you know, David Kay and I. We were at the MechaCon in July. We were out in New York one time doing launching a video game, and spent a lot of time going to different restaurants and shows. I actually took him through the Museum of Modern Art. All the times he'd been in New York, he'd never spent any time in there.
Wow.
And so we went there one day, and he just went, it's a fantastic place.
Mm-hmm.
Transitioning into your thoughts on fandom and BotCon and things of that sort. How do you feel about the Transformers fandom?
The Transformers fandom is, well, considering I've met quite a few of them and have, you know, a lot on my internet, you know, the Facebook page, they always, you know, always come up. And a lot of who I've met and known personally are tremendous. I mean, a lot of people poo-poo that kind of fandom, like, you know, with the Star Trek, a lot of the cool people, you know, like I know some people are going, you know, they go, oh, come on, Star Trek, come on, you know, Transformers, they're anime. But you know what's great about it? The people who watch this, these things, and get involved with these things are pretty bright. The most of the people I've met have been exceedingly bright and have great careers and are talented artists and some musicians I've met, and one I'm not plugging Candace anymore. No. My friend Candace is a tremendous artist and a devoted fan of both Transformers and Stargate. And all of them that I've met have just been, you know, just wonderful people.
They're not too
freaky. They're not freaks.
Yeah.
Right? Their common bond is their love of this cartoon or their love of this TV show. And when they get together with the fan groups, they just get to share their excitement and their zeal with a bunch of people who are like-minded, and to me, that's a great sense of community and a great sense of human social interaction, which I enjoy. Now, I gotta tell you, on the anime side, some of that stuff's a little creepy. You know, those little Lolita girls going around with their, you know, their Lolita outfits and the sort of racy kind of things that they wear.
Yeah.
I've said some of the costumes are like, ooh, don't let your mom catch you wearing that puppy.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them, but I don't know if it's sort of an expression of some kind of post-pubescent sexuality, but it's kind of bizarre. And when I see these older guys that are sort of hanging out with their little demon costumes and whatnot, I'm going, you guys are creeping me out. Sorry. Mind you, there was a few fans who I'd met who were kind of creepy. There was one guy who decided he wanted to be my bodyguard. And he had a sword and a long black coat, like, you know, Columbine kind of thing. And that was kind of scary. But apart from that, most of the people I met have been wonderful. I enjoy it.
What has been your other strangest fan experience besides the bodyguard?
Oh, I've got the two guys, funnily enough, from Kentucky. I wonder if it was you guys. No.
I'm from Chicago.
Oh, you're in Chicago. Okay, good. There was two guys at Chicago. And they were sitting at the bar, and I had just escaped a big clutch, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I'm having a drink, and the guy goes, "Hey, Mr. Chalk." And I said, "It's Chuck." He says, "Yes, Mr. Chalk. How can you stand it hanging out with all these losers?" And I said, "Wait a minute. You're here." "Yeah, but I'm not a loser." "Well, they're not losers either. They're great." And he said, "Yeah, but you know what? No, I'm different from them." And I said, "Really? How is that?" He said, "I had sex last night." And I said, "Really?" "Yeah, with a real woman." And I went, "Oh, well, that's great." And then he says, "I'll prove it. Do you see that? Look at it." And he pulls his shirt down and shows me a big hickey on his neck. And I went, "Hello." I said, I was tempted to say, "So you've had sex with a real woman. What about those times when you had sex with a woman who wasn't real? Who was that?" Trying to figure it out, and I was just conjuring up really creepy visions in my head. I'm going, "No, I won't touch that one." But that was a bizarre one.
Yeah,
that is creepy.
Can you tell us your thoughts, experience attending BotCon?
Attending BotCon?
Yes.
The very first time I attended BotCon, I was in Van Nuys, or not in Van Nuys, in Orange County, by Disneyland in L.A. And that was a big BotCon. And I first went in there, I had no idea what to expect. I just sort of showed up, and the guy took me in to the building, and I'm walking around, and nobody knew us from Adam. And walk into the main ballroom, and there was a bunch of gals sitting at a table when we first walked in, and the guy who was leading it said, "Hey, gals, this is Gary Chalk. He plays Optimus Primal." And the girls went, "Did you see Galaxy Quest?"
Yeah.
And when he walked in the room, and all those girls went like that.
Yeah.
These girls all did that, and I went, "Holy moly! What's this?" And then it was just like this exhausting experience for 3 days. I had no idea that it was such a big deal. I had zero idea. I just walked in and went, yeah, do the cartoon. Holy, well, can you tell us? Well, yeah, you know, yeah, just do the cartoon. Yeah, but it's gonna be, it's, you know, it's like I'm going, oh, yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's
now
it's,
I sort of get it.
It's my like dog seeing your favorite celebrity up close.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. If that were the case, I'd be going to a, oh, I don't know, an Alec Guinness convention or,
yeah. Or Stan Lee.
Or Stan Lee, or, you know, and there's a lot of them. My dog has just climbed up into my lap right now. You'll hear him, he's looking at the phone, he's going, "Why aren't you taking me out?" Because he's such a good dog. Well, there are two of them, I got two of them here, so they're...
Okay, we just, two more questions for you.
Yeah?
Did you ever, going along with the same BotCon question thing, did you ever browse the dealer room for toys?
Yes. I have browsed on numerous occasions and I've actually bought a Transformers anime shirt, and I bought some pens, and I bought what else? I can't remember. It was one little toy, one little car toy that I bought, just to, you know, sit it on there, and of course some Pokey or Pocky. Pocky seems to show up at every convention. I don't know why. It's a big Pocky thing.
The candy.
Yeah, those candy stick things. I bought a box of those. But there was, you know, I was talking to some guys there who when they're looking for this one Transformers toy. It's like a little car, but it's worth like tons of money. He only made like a couple of them, and I cannot remember for who the character is, but it was like a little green or a little yellow car.
Well, it's probably G1 Bumblebee.
That's the one. Is that the one? Yeah. The Bumblebee sort of rings a bell, yeah. But everybody's looking for the Bumblebee.
I can't tell you how much money I've dropped at the BotCon dealer room. Just thousands.
Oh, I know. Well, you'd be amazed if you go into, like when we did the product launch or the video game launch, yeah, for Transformers. That was the second game. We were in New York, and they had a display case of the Transformers, like all right from G1 Transformers.
Right.
And there were some pieces in there. There was one, I think it was like the original Transformers truck, and it was like something ridiculous, like $7,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
For a truck. But it was the very first one.
Yeah.
And they had them on the, it was like, if there was a couple of guys who got in as fans, I'll be quiet. A couple of guys as fans got into the product launch, and they were looking in this glass case, and they're just going, I want this. I want this. No, it was very fun.
Do you prefer to watch panels at conventions or participate in them?
I like to participate in panels. Watching them, especially if I'm watching the guys that I work with, I'm just hearing, you know, what I've already heard and already know. But sometimes I went to, a couple of anime guys, like the Anime After Hours. That was quite fun. Right. Pretty racy. But it was, we had some good jokes in there. And, I like watching the odd panel here every once in a while. But most of the time you're either in a panel or you're signing pictures, and then you get an hour an hour of free time to browse, and so you just go and hide in the guest room and go to sleep. Now my other dog has just climbed up into my lap now.
Uh-oh. Have you been contacted about doing voice work on an upcoming Transformers cartoon?
The upcoming Transformers cartoon? No. You're talking about the series or the movie?
No, cartoon. There's a new cartoon coming next year in 2010.
On TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, David Kaye's playing my part.
Oh. Well, he's playing a part, but you could play a part.
I could if I could go down to America, but they're recording it in Los Angeles. Yeah.
That would lead to the
David,
next question.
Yeah. David was. I thought David was playing Megatron, and then he ended up playing Optimus. But I don't know if the series is going ahead or not.
No, that series is done. There's going to be a new cartoon, brand new. Now that the second movie is already out and done with, Hasbro has struck a deal with Discovery Channel, and it's going to be a Hasbro Discovery Network. A cable channel, and they're a brand new cartoon on there.
Well, I hope they contact me. This is where you and the network and that great big internet world will go, hey, we want it back.
Exactly.
This is a plug for me. Hi, my name is Gary Chalk. Get me back to Transformers. Little plug. Because I love doing it.
Yeah. We love having you do it. Last question. The last Transformers cartoon was done in L.A. at the Cartoon Network headquarters. We're not sure if the next cartoon will be through Cartoon Network or not, but would you be interested even if you had to do the taping in L.A.?
Oh, yes. No. I love going down there.
So that's I thought you were more of a Vancouver-centric and didn't make the trip that often.
No, I'm Vancouver-centric because... Well, this is where I live, but I would, if they required us to record in L.A., I would go and record in L.A. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's a 2.5-hour flight from here, but I don't like going down. The only reason I would go down to Los Angeles for work, I'm not a big fan of the city, you know, as far as, you know, just going there to visit.
Right.
I was down there in the 80s and that and visited a few times since then, and to me, it's, you know, Los Angeles is just another city.
Yeah.
And for me, it's I've been in the business for 30 years, you know, in the movie business and the cartoon business for a long, long time. And the allure of the big studios down there is just not as great as it used to be when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, because I already know what goes on in there, and I've been doing that all my life, so it's just another location, but... I mean, it's fun to go to the beach every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly.
I go to Disneyland.
But it would definitely be worth it to us as fans for you to make the trip and just to hear you back in the... even if you didn't get the prime role, hear you back in the cartoons again.
Oh, that would be fun. Would be fun. So we'll see what they come up with. And that'll be in 2010.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're recording it right now or not, but I don't think they won't start to record it until 2010.
It's supposed to come out like fall of 2010 is when it's supposed to, supposed to be after summer. So,
I've heard they're casting now.
Yes.
Well, let's hope. I'll get on my agent and have her look at that and see what she says. Oh, stop it, you guys.
We would like to thank Mr. Chalk for taking the time to chat with us in the special All Things Transformers and the Beast Unleashed interview. Be sure to also check out his upcoming projects.
Behemoth.
Behemoth on Sci-Fi.
Yes. You mentioned to me when I was requesting, when I sent you a message when you and I were talking back and forth through Facebook, you mentioned that... the day previous to us recording this was a bad day because you were doing stuff with A-Team.
Oh, yeah. I went down and was trying to do this A-Team thing for the new A-Team feature, and I go down to do the interview last week, and I was so sick with this cold. I just went, I'm sorry, I can't do this. I'm just too ill. It was just a little one-day bit.
So
to do on the A-Team. It was going to shoot. It was actually going to shoot today, and I decided I wasn't going to do it.
So what role?
It went another way.
A-Team.
I'm sorry.
What role are you going to be on A-Team?
I'm not going to be on A-Team. I was supposed to shoot today, but when I went, I was so ill at the meeting that they decided that they were going to go with someone else because they didn't want to. You know, risk me being ill on the set.
Oh, okay.
So they went with another guy, but looks like it's going to be a fun movie. So, as I say, it was only a one day little cameo role as a judge, advocate general.
Oh,
yeah. But now they got a fellow named Tom Butler who's going to play the part, and I'm just going to recover.
I hope you feel better soon.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so too.
Yeah. This does it for the Beast Unleashed interview of Gary Chalk. Mr. Chalk, hold the line, and we will be right back.
Okay.
We are back. Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my freaking God. We just talked to Optimus Primal. We just talked with Gary Chalk. Wow.
I know. I know you can't see this because it's not video, but it's this big smile. It's a smile that radiates.
Yeah.
I hope you can feel it from there.
Oh, yeah. It's like giant gamma radiation.
I know. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. That was just so awesome.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, it's like I said in the outro to the David Kay interview, whenever I'm done talking to a celebrity, and mind you, I haven't talked to many, you know, interview-wise, but, you know, I mean, you know, I'm getting up there, but anyway.
It's an appreciable number so far.
Oh, yeah, and it's just like, it's like my vocals go into shock where I just can't say anything but, oh my God, yeah. Way cool, you know, just like one of those just crazy stupid one-liners, you know. But that was just the best thing ever. That is, again, that's like one of those once in a lifetime deals.
I wouldn't say that. I mean,
well,
technically, this is the second time I've talked to Gary Chalk, so I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be a second time in your life as well.
Right, but okay, if you'd have told me a year ago. When I started podcasting, that I would get to interview people,
yeah,
I'd have just gave you the middle finger and walked away. You know, I mean, it's, you know, it's that type of thing where, you know, you just never, you know,
never say never.
No, I know that. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, you know, you just never think that you're going to get a chance to do that.
That's right. With hard work and perseverance, you too can have a body like mine.
Oh, good Lord.
That's right.
Oh, God. Anyways, yeah, that was just great of Mr. Chalk to give us some time.
Fantastic guy.
It's very, very cool of him. And, you know, I think we got some promos out of him, too, so you may see those in upcoming Beast Unleashed episodes and maybe all things Transformers episodes. So this will, as I said in the intro, this will air on Christmas Day, so Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
And The Beast Unleashed, Episode 1, will air January 11th, 2010. Wow, 2010, that's going to get really hard to say.
Yeah, when you're writing your checks, it's like, no, it's not 9 anymore, damn it.
I'm going to have to write it out, I can't write 10. I can write, oh, whatever, but... Yeah. Anyway.
2010.
Yes.
You know, I have a problem with that because I kept saying 2010. And my boss was like, it's 2010. You know, it's 2008, 2009, 2010. No.
Okay, so this has been the Beast Unleashed podcast special interview with Gary Chalk. As I said in the intro, this will also be featured on All Things Transformers podcast as well. I have been TFG1 Mike, and you are?
Michael Wilson.
And we will see you next year.